You're listening to Real Talk Radio on ESPN Southwest Florida. Online at ESPNSWFL.com.
Got any rights yet? I do.
Just like that nitty gritty told me down by the cold creek. It don't matter if your poles are dusty. Beer in the tackle box out on the flat rock. Big net hook with only the right look. Lure in the sunshine. Ripples in the sweet tide. Papa's going out of sight. Even if it takes all night. Ooh, I'm gonna catch me a winner. Cause I kinda like a bit. And I don't matter.
Good morning and welcome back to Real Talk Radio. This is Captain Debbie Hansen. I'm in the studio this morning with my guest co-host Brian Stockbridge of Gulf Coast Kayak and Mike Hammond of the Colusa Blue Way Paddling Trail.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning. Is that coffee kicking in yet, gents?
Yeah, it's starting to. Get real chatty soon.
Yeah, and you know, so Captain Greg Stamper brought in some breakfast for you guys, so when you're ready, when you're hungry, I know Rick has been...
I was just going to say...
Rick has been digging in back there.
You know, it's great to have you guys first time on the show, but rookie mistake, man. You can't let your breakfast cool off too much. Come on, let's go, guys. I mean, you know, if they're not into those soon, I'll probably just
Rick
come in.
Will break through the door and come in here and grab them off that plate for sure.
I will.
All right, we're going to head over to line one because we've got Dave Westro with Lear's Economy Tackle standing by. Hey, Dave, good morning.
Good morning to the Southwest Florida Breakfast Club.
Yeah, well, the Breakfast Club hasn't really started yet, actually, in the actual studio. Rick's already.
Yeah, I mean, it's 8 o'clock, Dave. You know, I'm finished. I'm ready to take a nap now. But I'll hang in there.
So, Dave, what's going on at the shop? How are things up there, North Fort Myers world?
Actually, been busy. First week of October, kind of kicked in. We've seen some, I won't say new people, but some people that starting to return for the winter season from up north, from whence they came. So it's that started to kick in. Some of them have brought in their, I hope they're not listening, but the box of junk that hasn't been taken care of for the past 6 to 9 months, and they want to get it prepped up for the coming season. So, but it's really, really been pretty busy this week. So that's a good thing.
Yes, it is. I know. I've noticed that, too. Calls are starting to come in for a lot more frequently for trips, so it is good. It's definitely good.
Yeah, and the card, it's a little bit noticeable upkick of car traffic.
Yes. Yep.
So and then pretty soon you won't be able to go to a restaurant.
Right? Get out there now and go to your favorite restaurant before things get too crazy.
Get it done in the next 30 days because then you're going to have 5 months. So.
Exactly. So, Dave, I know that, talking with Brian and Mike here in the studio this morning, I know that you guys have a mutual connection in Dan Carnes.
Yes.
Yeah. So I know you've spoken very highly of Dan and Dan worked. How long did Dan work with you, Brian? How many years?
Dan was a kayak fishing guide with us probably for about 4 or 5 years.
Yeah.
And Dan's a great guy. He's actually the guy that first one that took me kayak fishing when I first moved here about 9 years ago. So one of the best teachers in the area. Not so much in the area now. He's living in an RV all over the country. But
what
a fantastic guy.
Yeah, absolutely, and absolutely one of the nicest guys you ever met.
Absolutely,
yeah, he is.
When he left on his road trip, he brought some things in there for us to get fixed up for him. And I told him, I said, if you run into trouble on down the road in your travels, because they're going to be gone, I guess, for about 2 years, roughly. And I said, they've got their whole itinerary planned out for about 2 years. They know where they're going to be this time next year, pretty much. They've got a campground, spot reserved for them somewhere.
Yep.
I said, just, pack some, a reel or two up, whatever it is you're having problems with, put it in the mail, send it to us. Give me your, your next destination, where you're going to be, and we'll just get it fixed and send it there to you. So, I mean, they've really had things planned out well. I wish I was that good at planning out things, but they got it figured out. They're based on weather, the time of the year, you know, and that's where they're going to be. I don't imagine they're going to be in North Dakota in January.
No, not with him having some Florida blood in his system, right? I'm sure he's planned that out pretty strategically. That's awesome.
He's originally a New Englander, and I mean, yeah, that's he kayaked and everything when he was up there, and he's very, very good. A good instructor. He's done a couple of seminars here at the shop for us, and very, very well received, you know. So,
yeah, I think Dan could stop at any town on the eastern seaboard and teach people how to fish. He's fished, yeah, from New England to Florida, from, you know, all the way down to the Keys. The guy's got so much knowledge.
Yeah, that's amazing. That's awesome. So, Dave, yeah, talking about kayak fishing here in the studio this morning, you know, I'm sure, what types of things do you see, you know, folks who are coming in and they're doing a lot of kayak fishing? Obviously, you know, Brian has a lot of, you know, kayak fishing accessories and things in his store, in his shop. But anything in particular that you see folks coming in for when they're out there kayak fishing, you know, as far as your shop?
Well, I mean, the tendency, I think, is with kayak fishing being as close to the water as they are, the rods tend to be a little bit longer and a little bit shorter butted.
Yep.
Rods, you know. I'm not going to say on the downside of it is there is a tendency being so close to the water that when they're fishing or releasing fish, there's a, you know, possibility of the reel getting into the water. You know, we try to steer people a little bit, but being a little bit more careful. It's almost like wade fishing.
Yeah.
You know, you're close to the water there, and you get a fish on, you're going to try to release it somewhat of an awkward position to be able to do that, particularly with longer rods, getting the fish close enough to you. But I think the longer rods are needed for the cast more than not. I mean, it gets you a little bit more casting distance. And I think early on, somebody was talking about anchors and the type of anchoring system. In some instances, you know, another way to anchor is to stick your foot out of the boat and drag it on the bottom. But drag it on the bottom. No, I'm just kidding.
Dave.
I do know. Years and years and years ago, I bought my for Christmas. Bought my younger son, Mike. We bought him a kayak, and he took it over on Sanibel, put in at a blind pass on the beach, a blind pass, went on the outside and went up into, at that time you could get into Clam Bayou from the outside, and he had experienced some really, really good fishing in there. One of the first things that he ran into, he got a pretty good sized redfish on the, or a snook, and it headed back towards the bushes. He tended to go with them. You know, went for, not for a ride, but they got back up into the bushes on him pretty quick. So he learned that his anchoring system had to be improved.
Through trial and error. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well,
that's what fishing is a lot, trial and error.
That's true. That is definitely true. And so what about nets? Because I know I've seen a lot of the nets that have collapsible handles. Obviously, you're trying to maximize space when you're on a kayak in any way, shape, or form that you can. So I've seen a lot of the nets, and I've actually used one of the nets that has a handle that actually goes on your arm. So you're able to just make it really easy, and then when you're ready, you know, to stow it, you just collapse the handle and put it off to the side. Do you guys?
Yeah, I mean, I don't have that, and I don't know of any of my wholesalers that do. And that's kind of interesting that you bring that up, because I'm going to I'm going to explore that with a couple of my wholesalers. And when I'm looking through catalogs, I don't seem to see it. The one, excuse me, the one net that we do carry, and it's listed as a kayak net. It's the Stowmaster series of kayak net, which actually the handle collapses within itself.
Mm-hmm.
But it's got a key to it, and it'll actually fold up from the storage standpoint, hence the name Stowmaster. But that's the only thing that we carry in a short handle net. There are other nets that are out there a little bit bulky because of the size of the bow, but that's interesting you bring that up about the part that how it would attach to your arm. I'm gonna look into that and see if I can't find something like that. But Stowmaster is the only thing that we carry right now, and I would have to say it's a moderately expensive net. It's like $150.
When I used the collapsible net that went on your arm, it was at a Florida Outdoor Writers event, Dave. So I'll see if I can find some information on it. If I can find it, I'll text it to you.
Yeah, a brand name.
Yeah. Yeah, you Brian, have you heard anything? Do you know anything about those collapsible nets that I'm referring to?
Yeah, the collapsible nets are certainly, like you had mentioned, you know, you don't have a lot of space in a kayak, so you got to kind of maximize every inch. And collapsible nets are very handy in a kayak. You know, you can use larger nets that don't collapse. If you have an extra rod holder, you can certainly put it there. I have not used the one or even seen the one that actually goes on your arm, so
really?
I'd be interested to learn more about that one as well.
Yeah, I'll see if I can find the information on it, because it was definitely, you know, a lot smaller and more compact and easier to use on a kayak for sure. So, yeah. Yeah, so longer rods, having a collapsible net if you can find one. And I know these days almost everyone is making the nets with the rubberized or silicone coating, which is great and so much better for the fish.
Yeah, and they're generally snag proof from lures. I mean, your point of your lure, your hook doesn't get entangled in the mesh, so to speak.
Yeah, for those of you who fish with treble hooks especially. Yeah, definitely. So, Dave, what's the word up there as far as the fishing reports? What have you been hearing from the river?
The river hadn't changed much at all. Actually, the salinity, even with the rain we've had the past 2 or 3 days, the salinity level actually went up from what it was last week. Last week it was like 0.026. I mean, it was like drinking water, you know. Now it's going into yesterday evening, it was about 3.02. So it had actually gone up a couple of notches, which was kind of surprised me with the rains. Because here at the shop, we had rains both Wednesday, Thursday, and then yesterday evening was crazy. I mean, it was a downpour here from about 8:15 on. It just poured buckets off and on, but the fishing in the river, it's about the same. Snook, redfish, jack's ladyfish, particularly at the outflows of creeks and canal systems.
Mm-hmm.
If the folks can get out there to them, you know. And again, I think I alluded to it last week, is a fella came in here and was telling me, you know, he's on foot and he wants to know where to fish. He's been fishing down around the bridges and hasn't been doing very well, and he left, and probably a half hour later another guy walked in. He's fishing in the river in a boat and he's killing them, you know. So it's a matter of being at the right place
at the right time.
Another thing mm-hmm. that's come up this week, and it's in the past 2 days, it's been kind of a joke, is the Marine Fisheries Commission coming down with the opening of possible opening of Goliath grouper.
Yes.
With a short slot, I think the maximum is like 36 inches, and it's a $10 fee to apply for a $500 permit. I don't think there's many people going to going to take him up on that, because that's not the size fish that people moan and groan about. They moan and groan about the 250 to 350 pounder that's taking their fish,
right, that's
catching while
grabbing
while
what they're trying
offshore.
To reel in. Yeah,
yeah, and I also understand that situation of the bigger ones like that. They're obviously part of our breeding stock, and their claim is that the breeding stock has actually gone down. You know, it evidently must be an overpopulation of fish that are under 36 inches, but they're only going to allow you to, they're going to allow you to take 200 of them. So I don't know how much of a dent that's going to put in the population. And there, I don't think there's anybody going to spend $500 to take that fish.
Yeah. And that wouldn't take effect until 2023, if I'm
correct.
Not mistaken. Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And their final decision is going to be in at the March meeting, and
Commission.
There'll be another hearing, and people will voice their opinion. You know, my take on hearings like that is that's a legal requirement to have a public hearing, and people go there with whatever opinions they have or whatever scientific data that they have. But I generally find in my own mind that the commission's mind has already been made up as to what they're going to do. So I don't know whether there's going to be any change. And next thing you know, they'll be wanting to open the season on skunk apes or something like that. You know why you never see them down the Everglades? Because they're like an aquatic. They hang out in areas where there's a lot of water, and you never see them. And one of the reasons you never see them,
why, Dave?
Because when people come around, they tend to submerge slightly. If you've ever seen a picture of one, they have their head. Oh, I can't even do this to you, Debbie. Anyway.
Oh, Dave, you've done it many times before. Come on.
This head's got...
When they're submerged, they kind of look like what? Like a grassy outcropping? When you just
It's their head has got four nipples on it, and it's got an orifice in the middle, and those four nipples are actually sensors that when they go under slightly, see that orifice is like a snorkel, and so they can swim underwater with just the top of their head sticking out, and their sensors tell them to go left or right, or forward or backwards. But, I mean, what? you don't believe me?
Dave, I think
a picture of a skunk ape, you'll know what I'm talking about.
I think we should.
I'll spend $500 for that.
Right?
Yeah, okay.
We can dedicate next Saturday's 8 a.m. segment to skunk ape anatomy. Oh, my goodness. Yeah, well, what's their range, Dave? So when we're talking skunk apes here, like how far north do you think they go?
Oh, I don't think they get much out of the Everglades. There've been people said that they've seen them in Powell Creek here in North Fort Myers, but I doubt that seriously. I think they're more of an Everglades. They can hide down there better. You know, it's more water there. They can submerge slightly and swim around. Nobody even sees them.
Yeah,
except for their nipples.
Every once in a while, they claim that they see them walking through the underbrush and things like that. But I'm sorry.
Well, don't people come into the shop and show you photographic evidence, Dave? Like, come on.
Years ago, but believe it or not, years ago, yes. There were pictures around. The head system with those nipples and things on the top of them, like that, kind of look like a Nubian goat, if you've ever seen one of them.
I have never. I will have to Google Nubian goat to see what comes up. Oh, on that note, Dave, they're playing our tune.
Go Big Red.
Go Big Red. All right. Have a great weekend, Dave.
Appreciate it. Bye.
Take care. Bye-bye. That is Dave Wester with Lear's Economy Tackle. If they don't have it, you don't need it, but you can always go in and talk about skunk apes. You're listening to Real Talk on ESPN Southwest Florida and on the ESPN Southwest Florida app. We'll be back after these messages.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top five Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
You're listening to Real Talk Radio on ESPN Southwest Florida. Online at ESPNSWFL.com.
Good morning, good morning, and welcome back to Real Talk Radio. This is Captain Debbie Hansen. I'm in the studio this morning with my special guest co-host, Brian Stockbridge of Gulf Coast Kayak, and Mike Hammond with the Colusa Blue Way Paddling Trail.
Good morning.
Good morning. It is a pleasure having you guys in here in the studio this morning. So we have just gotten this slew of text messages about gators. And what you do.
I was going to mention that, like, earlier in the show when you guys first came on, we had a bunch of texts coming asking about being stalked by alligators on kayaks. Like, I mean, there was a viral video out, I think, just a few weeks ago of a woman who was in a kayak, and a gator was pretty much taking kind of a threatening pose, and didn't she, like, poke it away with her paddle or something? But is that a problem?
Well, I know Mike has a lot more gator stories than I do, but, you know, I spend most of my time out in Matt Lachey, and God's honest truth, in 9 years, I've never seen an alligator out there. So I've never had the experience of paddling with alligators, but I know Mike has. Mike's got some good stories.
Well, yeah, so Mike, let's hear them, because I know when I go fishing in the Everglades during the dry season, I'm fishing a lot of those Everglades canals. I mean, we see a lot of gators. And sometimes I see folks out there who are kayak fishing, and I've even seen people on paddle boards from time to time. And I'm talking about, I have seen Jurassic size gators. I mean, prehistoric size monster gators. So yeah, I guess speak a little bit to, you know, especially when you're fishing. I know too, when you're working a topwater lure, those gators hear that commotion on the surface, and they're attracted to that. So what has your experience been out there, and what is your advice for people who are kayaking in an area where there's gators?
First thing, don't do that lady on the video. Don't do what she did. Like,
right.
So the alligator, it may sometimes...
This is the example of what you don't do.
Right. Sometimes the female alligators, if they have a nest, they have babies, they'll come out a little bit and say, give us space. They're basically saying, just give this area space.
Back off.
Yeah. And if one point in the video, you can see the woman's actually paddling towards it so she can get a better photograph. Don't do that.
Yeah.
Like, she did everything wrong. That alligator's probably trapped and killed. So that's what you don't do. If you see an alligator, like other wildlife, give it space. I mean, it's a big carnivore, so give it even more space maybe. But I see them a lot. Every time in freshwater, especially if I'm up east of the Franklin Locks, these little creeks, you see them.
Yeah.
I give them space and they're fine. If one does kind of come out a little bit, I go out around it. Or if you're in areas where people fish a lot and they clean their fish sometimes, just be extra cautious, because maybe they're inadvertently being fed, but just watch and go around. But every time I've had people say, are you afraid of alligators? I say no, but then it just depends. Every once in a while, like I was telling you earlier, I stepped on the log and then a big section of it came up and it looked like a big crocodile head while I was in chest deep water. So At that moment, I was like, I thought it was a big crocodile. Yeah, so there was a moment of fear, you know, or I've had some try to get away from my a paddler I was with. It ran actually into the woods and jumped off the shoreline. Unfortunately, I was the one in the back, so that's where it was jumping. And that moment when it was in the air, but it wasn't being aggressive. It was trying to get away.
Yeah.
And isn't there a misconception that if you are paddling down, let's say, a river and you got an alligator or two that's maybe, you know, taking in some sun on the bank, and as you get closer, most likely that alligator is going to get into the water, not so much to attack you, but more that's where they feel
Absolutely.
More comfortable, right?
Yeah, that's what they do. That's where they go in and they hide. And it can be. There are some of these little creeks, they've got some big gators. You're paddling up and you realize the gator might be longer than the creek is wide. I turn around. I'm not going to paddle right over top of it and threaten it. You know, I just turn around and like, okay, this is a good spot to turn around. But they do. And sometimes they go in quick because they're scared.
Yeah.
On cold days, sometimes they don't go in. And then that's when you paddle and you go, whoops, you go around the corner and you're a couple, you know. But I've just show them lots of respect and give them space.
That's really good advice. And I think especially during their mating season. So I know I've noticed and paying close attention to their behaviors, because in the late spring, early summer, that's when you start hearing a lot on the news. Oh, an alligator, you know, climbed up somebody's fence or was found in somebody's pool, because they're on the move. They're looking for their honeys that time of year.
They're getting competitive, too.
Exactly.
The little guys are only 7 foot are getting pushed out by the bigger guys or 10. I do give them lots. One other thing I'm going to say, don't paddle with your little dog. Your pets, like, we don't look like food, but your little four-legged, it looks like food. It's like bringing a pizza right by me, you know, when I'm hungry. Don't
tempt fate.
No.
Just not a good idea.
It's not.
I know. I can't tell you, like, so many people will say to me, we've got a little mini Australian Shepherd, and they're like, oh, don't you bring your dog out on the boat with you? And I'm like, absolutely not. I fish fresh water. There's no way I'm doing that. Right. I love my dog. It's just, no, there's no reason. It's not a good idea. Just don't even do it.
Well, and babies, give baby alligators space. One time I was in the water measuring a well, a little tiny baby alligator popped up right next to me. I could have reached down and touched it. Instead, I cursed and tried to get out of there as fast as possible.
Because where there's a baby, there's mama.
Yeah, the intern's like, what? Why are you afraid of that little? I said, the mother's right underneath me. And here the mom, the baby had strayed away, thankfully. They're about 50 yards away, all the other babies. But
yeah,
little babies, they're cute, but don't try to get that Instagram moment. Just give them space or it'll turn out bad.
No, that's a really good point, because you see people doing things that just, no, you got to use your common sense, have a healthy respect for Mother Nature and just keep your space. And that holds true for not just alligators, but any wildlife that you're seeing when you're out there. I know, Brian, you were talking a little bit about that earlier, you know, being that, you know, your whole crew is made up of master naturalists. So a lot of times you're out there doing an eco tour and you're on the kayaks, and you probably have a lot of opportunities where you're interacting with dolphins and manatees. But, what's your advice for people who are out there who are maybe down visiting the area? What do you tell people about interacting with wildlife?
Well, as you had mentioned, you know, respecting Mother Nature, that'll keep you out of trouble. But also understanding and acknowledging the fact that when we go out there on the water, you know, we're not in our element. You know, we're guests to their world. So we need to respect that. And you may see a dorsal fin or a couple dolphins, you know, a couple hundred yards away. And I see people's first instinct is just to want to paddle right up on top of the dolphins. That's the quickest way to get them to go away from you.
Right.
So the best way to do it is give yourself 50, maybe 100 feet away from those dolphins. And just give them space, view them from a distance. Yesterday I had an eco tour, and we saw one dolphin, a decent sized male dolphin, about 200 yards away, and we could kind of see which direction he was going. And I just said, let's just sit here and let's see which way it goes. And it came, you know, the 200 yards and kind of weaved its way in and out of our kayaks, and it was an incredible experience. Now, if we would have paddled right up on top of that dolphin, we would have never been able to experience that. So giving them space, acknowledging that we are the guests, you know, be respectful. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. That's really good advice. We got a text from Art the Bills fan. He wanted to let us know that East Bonita has skunk apes. So what's your advice for interacting with skunk apes?
I'm going down to the Everglades. I can't wait to find one.
Yeah, the Everglades, the research center, the Skunk Ape Research Center. I think that's we should take a field
that's
trip
the first
there.
Stop. Yeah, yeah.
And it's right off 41. Yeah. Right. Is it not far from the Clyde Butcher Gallery? I believe.
Yeah, it's not. And I tell you, those little spots. I know people like to kayak launch down that way too. Just again with the gators.
Yeah,
there are a lot of people fish there. Sometimes they clean their fish there. Just beware if an alligator is showing interest in you.
It's probably interested in you.
Yeah, just maybe find another launch spot. Yeah.
Yeah. That's probably.
Wait, just a second. I was on the phone. Did you say Skunk Ape Research Center?
Yeah. Absolutely.
They're one of our sponsors this year.
I was going, wait a minute here. Okay.
No, it's a real place. They've got a little zoo in there. They've got some history stuff. It's a really cool, it's an old Florida stop. It's a really cool old Florida.
I've heard they even have baby. I've heard they have baby skunk apes down there. Is that true?
I can't comment.
That'd be a scary neighborhood to live in case any of the skunk apes escape. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, so. Gosh, Rick, you're right, yeah. Man. I'm glad I'm up here.
Property
in
values are way down.
Jeez, yeah. All right, we got future Captain Bradley Finch standing by on line one. So let's grab his call here. Hey, Bradley, good morning.
Good morning, Captain Debbie. How are you?
Doing fantastic. How are you doing?
I'm doing amazing. I had the best fishing week.
You did? Okay, well, you got to fill us in. Tell us all about it. What'd you catch?
All right, so last weekend I went out on the shallow drafts. I took my friend George and my cousin Blake, and we slayed the snook and redfish. I caught 3 smart snook. One was 35, 37, and 33.
Nice.
That's a great day.
And my friend George also almost, one of his redfish was slop, but the other one wasn't. So one was 27 and one was 33.
Yeah. Well, but were you guys fishing down south, Bradley? Were you guys fishing down the 10,000 Islands, or were you fishing up here?
We were fishing the Stura Bay.
Gotcha. Okay. Which redfish and snook are still catch and release, but you mean size-wise, they were slot size.
Yeah, yep. And then
gotcha.
The bait we were using were white bait and thread fins. And the bait, oh my goodness, crazy amount of bait.
Yeah, I've heard there's been lots of bait off the beaches, that it's been really good. So pilchards and thread fins.
Yeah, this wasn't even by the beach. This was like in the back waters, like back by like oyster beds and stuff.
Yeah, fishing oyster bars back by the mangroves too.
Yeah, that's where the bait all was.
That's fantastic. It's good to hear. So you're fishing all live bait. Did you get out? Were you fishing any artificials at all?
No, just.
Just live.
Just live. You're going to be excited about this though.
What?
So I was fishing the Estero River and we come out of a ramp, and then there's a dock, and then you can start going fast in the river. And right where the idle sign is, I caught a bass.
Nice. Was it a pretty good-sized bass?
It was a pretty nice-sized bass.
That's awesome. Were you still
like
using
like a 4-pounder.
That's a respectable bass. Were you still using live bait?
Yeah, I was using white bait.
So you caught a bass on white bait. In the river. Well, very cool. That is awesome.
Yep.
So you've been getting out there on the Ginu still? Is that where you guys were fishing from?
No, we were fishing from the shallow draft.
Gotcha. All right.
Yeah.
Well,
and then the live well, like I was about to say, like the live well that we have is giant. We have a giant live well. It's like, I'm not sure how much gallons it is, but it's like a small bathtub basically. It's huge.
well that's awesome. That way, you know, I mean, if you get some, you get dirty, whatever, you can just jump right in, right? It's all good. Rinse
yep,
off real quick.
That thing was blacked out. That's how like much bait we got.
Nice.
We casted 3 times with a 6-foot net.
Yeah, well, you're getting darn good with that cast net. I've seen some video, so way to go. That is awesome. I'm glad
Thank you.
Had a really good week of fishing. That's fantastic.
Yes,
do you remember, Bradley? We've only got a couple of minutes, but were you fishing incoming tide, outgoing tide? Which tide phase were you fishing?
it was high tide, so I'm pretty sure it was outgoing.
Or the end of the incoming?
Yep.
Yep. Gotcha. All right. Well, thanks for the update and for the report. You going to get back out there this weekend?
Yep, definitely.
Go get them. Go get them. Well, thanks for the update. Send us some pictures if you can, and we will catch up with you next Saturday.
All right. Thank you.
All right. Take care, Bradley. Good hearing from you.
You too.
Okay. Bye. That is future captain Bradley Finch calling in with his fishing report. That's a darn good week out there on the water.
That's a great day.
When you catch that many snook over 30 inches, that's fantastic. Good.
And I like his name. I like his name a lot. He knows what he wants to do when he gets older.
Yes, he does. Yes, he does. All right. Time to head off to another break. You are listening to Real Talk on ESPN Southwest Florida and on the ESPN Southwest Florida app. We'll be back after these messages.
Whoa. Whoa, whoa. If I can make a living from walking in the woods, you can bet I'd be sitting pretty good, high on a hill, looking at a field downwind.
Listening to Real Talk Radio on ESPN Southwest Florida. Online at ESPNSWFL.com.
Good morning and welcome back to Real Talk Radio. This is Captain Debbie Hansen. I am in the studio this morning with my guest co-host Mike Hammond with the Colusa Blue Way Paddling Trail and Brian Stockbridge of Gulf Coast Kayaks out of Matlache.
Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning. Good morning. So, gators, skunk apes. Oh my gosh. I think we've covered all the wildlife here this morning, right? But I'd like to talk a little bit about how to dress and how to take weather into consideration when you're out there on the water. So we're going to touch on that. We actually have Captain Greg Stamper calling in with a fishing report this morning. So I'm going to grab his call, and then we'll get more into the weather and kind of how to prepare for a day out there of kayak fishing or a day of paddling. So let's grab Captain Greg. Hey, Greg, good morning.
Good morning, Captain Debbie. Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Thank you so much for bringing in the breakfast for these two gents and for Rick, of course.
Of course, no worries. Hey, I need to correct Dave on something, and I'm surprised he's old enough to probably remember this.
Uh-oh, here we go.
But we've had, you know, with all the people and the influx of commercial areas being built up and losing stuff to new neighborhoods, we used to have those skunk apes up further, but the jackalope population has just diminished to nothing. I think that was their main prey, so they've just moved south to where we have jackalopes still, and that's where they're staying.
Yeah, so you think the jackalopes are a primary food source for the skunk ape?
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. Dave will probably remember all the jackalopes running around up in the north area.
Yeah.
Fort Myers, years back before we cleared out all those neighborhoods.
I think they have a whole section on that at the Skunk Ape Museum.
The Skunk Ape Research Center.
Right, right.
Yeah.
So you're not telling us anything we didn't already know, Greg.
Yeah. I mean, come on, bring something new to the table. Well, so here's what I'm wondering. Can we train the skunk apes to go after the Burmese pythons? Because then that would be of benefit to our ecosystems. I'm sure we can.
Does he know he can win $10,000 if he comes in with the moat?
Right? Right? Exactly. So, all right.
Well, good stuff. Well, on the other end of it, the fishing this week has been fantastic. The redfish bite just continues to be stellar. There's just so much bait everywhere. And there are times when I think there's so much bait, it does make it a little bit more difficult because there's so many things for them to pick on. But the snook are laying up with them as well. We've caught a lot of nice snook this week and a lot of nice redfish this week. And then we'll fall back towards the end if they want to get their little backcountry slam and pick up a trout real quick, usually using that same white bait. But interestingly enough, and I'm happy to say I caught my second little rat red this year, this week.
Oh, good. That's great to hear.
Nice to see. So I know there's at least two of them out there for the future. We'll see if
there better be more than two.
Start the flood. Well, the guys up there in Mount Lachey, you probably are seeing some small ones, I hope. I mean, are you seeing any of those 12 to 15, 16-inch reds anywhere?
Yeah, I had a very interesting day. I think it was last week or the week before, but I went out for about 4 or 5 hours, and I caught a bunch of fish. I think I caught 3 or 4 reds, and I'm not joking, none of them were over 12 inches. I mean, they were the cutest little redfish I'd ever seen. And then the snook were the same thing. It was all tiny, like, you know, maybe 14-inch snook was like the biggest one I caught. It was just one of those strange days.
Yeah.
Well, that's good. I mean, we see lots of small snook, you know, the, like I call them juniors, and they could be anywhere from, you know, like you said, 12 inches up to about 20. We catch lots of those, but, you know, in my neck of the woods, we have not seen those little baby reds anywhere, really. And, you know, I fish with a lot of larger baits, the big white baits and pinfish and stuff. So in some aspects, I probably am fishing with baits that are maybe a little too big for them. But I do, from time to time, use shrimp, you know, and shrimp under corks on the mangroves. I should be picking up more, and I just haven't quite seen that yet. The other interesting thing this week, and it's going to start going off, I think, once we get this next front or so, maybe two fronts into it, is we're skipping lots of pompano in the back bays. So they're not out front on the beach. They're all in the back bays, and we're talking big fish. I think we're going to have a heck of a pompano season this year if we can keep our water clean for another month and a half and get into some cooler area.
Yeah, the fish that I saw, what was it, a 7-pound pompano that Captain Matt DeAngelis?
No, his was 8 pounds on the Boga.
Wow. That's insane. That is that's a huge pomp. Yeah.
Big fish. And he was trout fishing. So that's a hell of a bycatch when you're trout fishing.
For sure. Absolutely. So, Greg, I'm going to throw, we got a text earlier. I'm going to throw this out to you because I'm sure you've got some recommendations given the fact that, you know, you're running saltwater trips and you know all the guys over there at the marina and you're plugged in. LeBron Hader, number one, sent in a text and he's wondering, what's a good website or who should he contact? He wants to go out with his family about 40 miles out. So he wants to do an offshore trip, obviously. And he's looking at potential charter guides. Do you have any recommendations as far as offshore?
I'd recommend he waits till some of these closures open. That's my first recommendation.
Right.
Well, unless he's okay with just the snapper fishing type of stuff. You're so limited right now other than, you know, catching lanes. You can't catch those anymore. Right now they're basically just still catching a mangrove snapper and the occasional nice gag grouper. That's pretty much all you can get coming in. But as things open up, and I didn't even look to see what the regs are and when they are going to reopen some of these things, that'll give him the best.
Well, Red Snapper is going to open back up on the 15th for federally permitted charter boats.
So we got federal guys, Scott Lavis, the Fish and Tails. He's he's fantastic. You can get out there with them. Hog Wild. There's a couple other guys that can get out there deep. Those are long days. You're talking 10 to 12 hour trips.
Yeah.
You know, it's not cheap, but if you got 6 people, which is the max that those guys are going to be able to take out there, you can split that up and it won't cost you as much. You know, the drift boats and stuff, they're not going to get out that far to where those fish are. So you're definitely going to need to go with a private guy, whether it's somewhere off of Fort Myers Beach, like the guys I was saying, or whether you're going to the north end of the beach. There's a couple guys up there that can run out deep. And then Sanibel, offshore charters, he runs out of Punarasi. He does a good job, too. So you can look those guys up, and you better get on their books and figure that out.
Yeah, soon.
They're not going to be available, you know, if you call on them only a few weeks out.
Good advice. Good advice. Well, I know you're headed out there this morning, so we won't keep you. In fact, you're probably getting ready to head off on your charter now. But appreciate the update.
Getting ready to pull into the marina and go out and hopefully just throw my net one time and get back and start our day.
There you go. Black it out like future Captain Bradley Finch.
Sidelines. You guys have a great morning.
All right, Greg. Thanks so much. Have a great day.
Thank you for
breakfast. We'll talk to you next Saturday.
Thank you.
Bye. That is Captain Greg Stamper of Snook Stamp Charters calling in. And we call him the unofficial chef of Real Talk Radio because he's always bringing in breakfast. So, yeah, I wanted to touch on a little bit about So how to dress, how to prepare for a day out there on the water? Because, again, I know a lot of people coming down from up north or visiting the area who may not be down here on a regular basis. So what do you guys recommend? Obviously, moisture-wicking clothing, and you want to protect yourself from the sun. So what advice do you have there?
Yeah, leave the baby oil at home. You don't need that
right
out there. Yeah, sun protection is huge. You got to think of, you know, sitting in a kayak is almost like sitting at the beach times two, because you're not only getting the sun from above, but you're getting the reflections off the water. So, yeah, when I go out kayak fishing, I'm wearing long pants, long sleeves. I have, you know, a big hat on, sunglasses. If I'm wearing a baseball cap, I have a buff on my face. It's just, you know, it keeps you out of the sun, keeps you cool, plenty of water. You know, we see too many people out there get dehydrated and start not feeling so great, and that's not a place you want to get dehydrated. So pack more water than you think you're going to be able to drink, and you may drink it all. But, yeah, make sure you have it on board.
Yeah, I think coming from up north, and I came down, if it's not hot, I'm thinking, well, the sun's not, it's not that hot, but the sun's way more powerful down here. So just,
yeah,
it doesn't matter if you don't feel that hot, you're getting more sun. So just protect yourself.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I always tell people too, like the night before you're getting ready to go out on a trip, like hydrate, hydrate, hydrate. I used to do a lot of running, and I would get those electrolyte tablets, and they sell like the emergency packets too, which have electrolytes in them, because even down here with as much as we sweat, you know, sometimes just water isn't enough. You need to get those electrolytes back into your system, especially during the summer with as much sweating you're doing, especially if you're doing something active like paddling out.
Yeah,
there,
those tablets work really well. In my first aid kit in my dry bag, I always have these single-use Pedialyte powder, which just goes in your water.
Yes.
And that is a great way to rehydrate as well.
That's a really good tip, Brian, for sure. All right, and we'll talk a little bit about weather and weather considerations when you're out there on the water and paddling when we come back. Got time to head off to another break. You're listening to Real Talk on ESPN Southwest Florida and on the ESPN Southwest Florida app. We'll be back after these messages.
Boy, there's a few things you need to know about me before you let your sweetheart get in too deep. Why big events don't feel like home? Don't wanna rock, I need a rolling stone. You wanna hold me, baby, just set me free.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.